Quiet.
When?
What? You don't establish a committee like that. You see, the way that provision is currently, they're just going in to say, you establish a committee and then in the manner to Christ.
In the regulation.
You do indicate. You must take all the time. And the term of office and all those things. And then the regulation will be informed by what is directed in the
right.
Because it's not necessary to always perform.
Can we continue with our deliberations? Mr. McKay, are you ready now? But I would like us to go back to the issue of status determination committee, but maybe after you clarify some of the issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought that is where we would start, Chairperson, because maybe it wasn't so clear.
Yeah.
The Status Determination Committee, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, was not intended to be a statutory body. This is the intention of the department. The department says that the status determination is such an important decision and determination that must be done. And it cannot be done by a single person at a very low level. So what the department is saying that is there should be more than one person that determines the status of a person. So a group of people, a put together of minds to deal with the issue. It is not intended to create a statutory body. So what we are talking about here is the administrative function that is done now by one person. We are now saying that two or three such people need to sit with different qualifications and maybe even from a more multidisciplinary unit or committee that needs to take that decision, which is an administrative function. So it is clear when we have a look at what we are intending to do here, Chairperson, in Section 3.2, that each refugee reception office must consist of at least one status determination committee that will be established by the Director General in the prescribed manner to consider and deal with applications of asylum. asylum in accordance with Section 24 of the Act. So we are not trying to create here a statutory body. It is just a administrative function of how we come to the determination of status, of refugee status within South Africa, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson.
Could we maybe invite the parliamentary advisor as well as the state law advisors first to advise us here? Or for their opinion on this?
The Chairperson has just had a discussion with the department on the same issue, and I'm sharing the same sentiments with them. This is an administrative body. It's not a statutory body like the Refugee Appeals Authority, whereby you set it up, you put composition, you put functions, you put the term and all of that. So it's not the same. That was not the intention. I think we, my colleague here has already explained fully what was the intention from the department. But so that is the reason why they're going to deal with the composition and determination and so on in the regulations, because it is within the prerogative of the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you, ma'am. I would agree, or not would, I am in agreement that it's an administrative function that this committee will serve. And as such, it's one can even say it's a departmental function, but it's certainly quasi-judiciary. It's a weighing up of facts, it's weighing up of what the law will provide. I don't have Section 24 with me. I assume that is what Section 24 will guide us. I'm just wondering, the department is well aware of the Dawood Shalabi and Thomas decision, where the High Court, first of all, said that you need to give guidance in a piece of legislation as well as in regulations of how to perform an administrative function in accordance with the Constitution. You cannot assume that people will know that. So Section 24 probably does that. What I would look into, in terms of I don't see a constitutional issue with having a committee instead of a person. I don't think that's an issue. I also don't think it's necessary to put every little detail there that you need to know. But one must just be aware that this decision-making body, taking an administrative decision, will be, in terms of our history at this point in time, will be taken to court sooner or later. So whoever sits on that committee must be aware that their decisions will be taken to an independent tribunal. And then we come to the issue of, should we have a political office bearer there? Is that the function of a political office bearer? But that's another discussion. That's a policy decision that must be taken. The fact that you have a political office bearer on the Status Determination Committee doesn't change the role of the committee, doesn't change the nature of the function. One would just say, but who is going to be the respondent in these actions? Or even if they want to take an appeal or something, when they will be the appellant, who will in the Status Determination Committee will be the person that will appear before the court? Is it going to be the whole committee? That's something to think about. But otherwise, I agree with that, that there's no real issue with having the committee there or a person. Thanks.
Honourable members, I suggest we flag it for now. We will come back to it. Maybe the department will also, digest it and come back to it later on. Can you continue, Mr. McKay?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, sorry, if I may, just on the issue of whether or not crime is serious, and the word was used as serious non-political offences, and the reference was also made to littering, where you can get a fine or imprisonment, whatever the case. If you read section clause 2B of the on page 3, it's line 26. Well, it's basically 23 to 26, more or less. It says it has committed a crime which is not of a political nature, and which, if committed, it would be punishable by imprisonment. There's nothing said about the option of a fine. Now, if somebody's punishable by imprisonment, state imprisonment, surely that indicates the seriousness of the crime. If you commit murder, if you commit murder and you're directly sentenced to imprisonment, obviously you'll fall under it. But if you litter and you get the option of a fine, it doesn't fall in the purview of this act or this specific principle. So I think what we're trying to do here is to say that it's, if you go to jail directly, it's obviously that is an indication of a serious crime that has been committed. So there's no option of a fine.
Okay.
I think that's how we try. Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Ms.
Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just trying to get to the issue of I just can't recall, Chairperson, on page 10 or page 9 that was raised by Honorable Lagmore. Chairperson, with regard to a political office bearer in page 8, because it is the appeals authority is an independent body, a statutory body, and it functions without the interference by either the department or the minister, we really don't foresee any person, including a political office bearer, will have a conflict of interest at such a on such a body. So whether the person is a political office bearer or not, these statutory bodies are run at particular functions. They deal with issues in a particular manner, and we don't see that there would be any conflict of interest because you will be guided by the be guided by the functions of what that statutory body is supposed to do.
Just to add on that, I just wanted to highlight that the issue here is to determine status. I don't know how is the political office bearer going to use the decision of status determination. So the issue here is to determine status. Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. McKay, while you are still consulting with one another, can we give Advocate Jenkins a chance maybe to help us here?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, ma'am. I want to agree with the department that it's an administrative function in the appeals board. Once again, it's quasi-judicial. You're having a political person sitting there. It's not even necessary that there will be a political office bearer. But what I want just to say and to have the committee included think about is that when you have a political office bearer there, the decision that goes out, and we must think, it depends on the kind of application, where that decision goes to in terms of international dissemination of information. We were all, I think, very aware of the asylum application in Canada made by a South African. Mm. The Canadians there could rightly say, granting refugee status is a non-political act. We had nothing to do with it. Our government, our leading political party, they had nothing to do with it. Okay? It's a judicial function, it's an administrative function, that's going to go to an appeal, and they will deal with it independently. It should not affect the international relations between country to country. South Africa has a similar issue with the general from Rwanda. And there's been a slight tension between, in terms of international relations between Rwanda and South Africa because of the presence of that person there. One can probably assume that there's going to be a similar thing between Zimbabwe and Ethiopia with Mengistu still there. So what one must guard against is to actually make our asylum procedure appear political. Mm. Even though we say, but domestically we're happy with what the decision is taken, a court might even have agreed that fair procedure has been followed. But our neighbors or countries further than that might look at it and say, yes, sure, of course you will say that. But there you have a politician sitting on that appeal board who've granted refugee status to that person, and what you're saying to us is we're not a country that respects human rights. Therefore, we don't want to trade with you. That's the kind of hypothesis I want to throw out there. I mean, it's not a factual thing, but it's something to think about. Thanks, ma'am.
Can we then continue?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we will note this, Chairperson, if we could, and just consult on this issue and come back to the House on it. Chairperson, if I may continue, with regard to the integration of asylum seekers and refugees, indeed, we are in agreement with the Honourable Member that we need to have clear policy with regard to migrants. And I think that is why, as a department, we have said that we are reviewing our whole immigration policy from a policy point of view, to have a coherent policy that guides us in administrating migrants coming into the country. And of course, that will be open to public discussion as well and input as well. And we are in the process of doing that, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think those are we've responded to most of the issues. If there's anything we have not, please, if we could be reminded, and we will look at it.
Chairperson, page one of the questions that was not answered is on page 16. It's clause 9, and it deals with the fact that you will not take time spent waiting for a decision by the department into account when an application for permanent residence is considered. Well, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. If I may respond to that. Chairperson, we are of the view that if you write legislation, you don't legislate bearing in mind inefficiencies presently in a system, but you legislate from a point that you are efficient and you are able to do what you need to do within a specific time. So the inefficiencies, as you know, Chairperson, is there because of various reasons. Mm-hmm. One is the asylum system in South Africa is clogged. And it is clogged mostly by what we call economic migrants coming into the country, not for purposes of seeking asylum, but for purposes of looking for work in South Africa. Now, we argue that we we have more. That is why, if you also have a look at our, we have a high number in the mixed migratory flow coming into South Africa of economic migrants, and we do believe that we have put in place certain processes that will unclog, if I may use that word, the system. One of them is we are currently looking at a solution for economic migrants. How do we deal with economic migrants coming into the country, those that do not qualify as per the Immigration Act, and how do we deal with them? And Chairperson, we have already seen that with the dispensation that we are now using to document Zimbabweans in South Africa is a way of moving towards a dispensation that would deal with the economic migrant coming into South Africa, that would reduce requirements. People would be able to apply for work permits, study permits, or any other permits within the Immigration Act. We do believe by doing that, we will take a whole lot of people out of the asylum queue. We also do believe, Chairperson, with regard to some policy changes that we intend introducing within the area of asylum management and migrant management in South Africa, that those would also, Chairperson, move a lot of people it will disaggregate, we believe, the mixed migratory flow coming into South Africa. And once we have a solution to deal with bona fide asylum seekers, and we are able to deal with economic migrants coming into South Africa, that we would be able to better manage that space of asylum seekers within South Africa, because we do believe that there will be much less people in that particular queue that will be applying for asylum in South Africa. And if you look at it holistically, Chairperson, with the kind of basket of solutions that we will come into you with regard to policy in future with regard to asylum seeker management, we do believe it will assist us in the efficiency going forward to deal with asylum seekers, because we would have disaggregated them, dealing with, on the one hand, in terms of the Immigration Act, with economic migrants, and using the Refugee Act to deal with asylum seekers. So we do believe that moving forward, we would be able to adequately deal and with great efficiency deal with bona fide asylum seekers coming into the country. And that is why we are legislating now and saying that we believe that it should not, these inefficiencies that we currently have should not be a basis for permanent residence in South Africa. That moving forward and people apply for asylum, they are adjudicated timelessly, they are granted asylum seeker status timelessly, that it is not necessary to legislate for those inefficiencies that currently exist within the system, Chairperson. Thank you. And Chairperson, if I may, in one's application for permanent residence, apply for permanent residence using a variety of reasons for that. And if one of your reasons is that you have been in the country for a particular period of time, and one of the reasons is that it has taken so much time, and you can substantiate why were you in the country for so long, it will be considered under the Immigration Act in terms of whether that information that you have given is adequate for you to be granted permanent residence. But it should not be automatic, Chairperson, that if you are in the country for 5 years, you can get permanent residence. Thank you, Chairperson.
So the last question is that one of unaccompanied children. who are supposed to fill in forms. Am I right, Honorable Lovemore?
Chair, yeah, the forms were raised as an issue last week. The responses by the department make reference to regulations. So, if we could have a response on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In our response, we do concede that our processes and our interaction and referral system to other government departments is not adequate, and that we would need to review that and have a look at how we refer these cases to other government departments. And we will be taking care of that in our regulations as well as agreements between departments on how we deal with unaccompanied minors coming into South Africa, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. McKay. Honorable Marcella, I think it's your chance.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. A lot has been said, but it remains a concern, which I'm hoping that the department, while seeking legal opinion and consulting on the matter of criminality or granting a refugee status on those people considered to have committed serious crimes, with a matter that is receiving very serious consideration, given the challenges, of course, with some of the crimes that are handed on people, mainly in the area, in the region, in SADC. We know what kind of governments we have, the systems, and of course the reports that we've received in the media and otherwise, that it's not always fair in terms of their criminal justice system. Sometimes whatever that is happening there on that side, that is deemed criminal, will sometimes be based on criminal on political affiliation, and of course whether you are a person that belongs to party A other than party B. I think that is a very, very matter that puts a prejudice on any application going forward. And if people will receive them and then we trace their records and we base our judgment, you know, on whether they have been previously convicted or not under those criminal charges, it might pose a very prejudice on their application in South Africa. However, Chair, the point has been taken that whatever that we consider serious in our case will then be monitored and checked whether the person's crime or criminality is indeed that which deserves imprisonment. So there's a very wide response which has been given, which I think the fact that they have undertaken to investigate gives us room to see how far will they go as a department on that matter. The other issue, Chairperson, is on page 11. Page 11 deals with the registration of a child, the section 21B, which has been raised as an issue. Where the month has been given as a provision, only 1 month. We know in our situation in South Africa, I accompanied a member yesterday to register a child who has been born more than a month and a half ago. I mean, I'm talking about an honorable member in the house who didn't register the child at birth. Now, how much more to people who come into the country, obviously traumatized, who may have suffered psychologically on a number of grounds based on the persecution that they have come across in their countries, where they flee either political or, you know, the issues, you know, ethnic or issues of religious persecution from their countries of birth. Now, this might be a challenge because this person will not be really thinking about the child. They would be thinking about their stay in comfort and obviously whether they are safe in this country. Now, for the first month or two, you'll find that people are wandering around, not knowing exactly what to, despite the information being made present and available to them. I think it's only assisting to deal with the other administrative challenges that you may see in the process going forward, because it might be unnecessary having to apply other legislations to try and accommodate those people who may have failed to come forward in that period of 1 month. So I would urge the department to reconsider the decision of giving 1 month to probably saying a maximum of 3 months, so that you then able, I mean, you see what happens in the Bight Bridge when people come in and they are told that you must come back in 5 days, but in fact 14 days, but they do not come back for them to be able to be processed and obviously go to the refugee reception centers. So I would strongly appeal for them to reconsider the decision on the 1 month in this case. Page 13. No, I think that one is just a comment, really, on the UNHCR. I think, Chairperson, it's good that the department does not take away. I think it's the fact that it's feasible. You will recall when we interacted initially with the department on this particular matter, that the fact that it is visible, that the UNHCR is recognized as an institution central to the court, obviously another organization that have a role to play. This does put our mark, I mean, this does put South Africa on the mark as a country that recognizes and respects the human rights of the people. The last one is page 16. Mr. McKay's remarks on section 27C, that when you legislate, you don't take into mind the challenges confronting the system. It does put a precursor. A precursor that the wrongs and possible inefficiencies and of course the reality on the system that we have picked up, both the department and us as public rights, do not hinder on some of the laws that we pass every day. And the reality, Chairperson, is that if you look at the turnaround strategy, and the reason why some of the areas in the turnaround strategy itself have not been implemented, it is simply because of the inefficiencies in the system. Now, this, of course, the issue of the naturalization, as we have already been raising for quite some time, and the fact that it takes time to get those people, but we are talking here about individuals who have been here for quite some time and have been waiting on the system to respond within the statutes that we have as a country. Now, not because of the fault of their own, but because of the system, and obviously having valid reasons which are considered to be true and accurate. Now, I think those people should be considered and be given the consideration that the time that you spend in the country, being an asylum before your status has been granted as a refugee, should not simply fall away when you have to apply for residence in South Africa. It should be considered and be included in your system, in your application. So the simply brushing that away, obviously with the reasons that are given, that does not assist, Chairperson. And of course, if you consider what I just spoke about now on page 13, the recognition of human rights and the fact that we want to work progressively as a country to be seen and our flag raise and fly high as one of the countries that really take pride in human rights activism. This really does not assist much in enhancing that role. I just hope that Chairperson, my point is clear here. That to try and harness our emphasis on human rights and taking that point very seriously. I would like to hear the response of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Tibedi.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Firstly, let me appreciate the department for having taken some serious steps to respond to the comments that were made during the public hearing. I think that is highly appreciated. The first point I just want to flag is the point around the people who might have committed serious crimes from their areas of residence and coming to South Africa. I think we must move from the premise that we're already having some challenges, our own challenges, in terms of crime in the country that we're trying to deal with. And I think the legislation that we pass must take that into account. In other words, we must not pass legislation which suggests that we do not have a problem, which all of us would know that we do. So I'm raising this because I honestly agree with the view that says people who commit serious crimes such as murder are not allowed to flee into the Republic. Of course, maybe we can debate on the definition of serious crime, but I honestly believe that as a matter of principle, it is fair that such an assertion be made in the Act. So I'm in full support of that, so that we don't allow criminals, people who commit criminals, to come in. And sure, the point that was made earlier on about maybe without an option of a fine and so on, can really be one that covers the whole thing, so that we don't lose it. Because if we lose the whole thing, I think we'll be opening a flood for criminals to come to our country. The second point is around the political office balance. Maybe I would need some clarity as to maybe we must define what we mean by political assistance, so that we don't end up, and I take the view that was made by, I think it's a legal advisor that side that says we must be careful not to sort of undermine the integrity of the committee unintentionally, you know. But I'm just worried that if we say political office bearers, are we talking about people who are active in politics? Or are we talking about people who are elected to hold certain positions in political organizations? So at least it becomes clearer. Otherwise, we'll run the risk of people who are appointed there being questioned, just on the basis that maybe they are active somewhere in political organization. So I just want a clear definition as to what do we mean. Because this, somebody said earlier that some of these decisions will end up in court and so on. So at least we know, we are clear in our own mind as to what do we mean. the last but one point I want to make, of course, is on the issue of, I think it's unaccompanied minors. So the point was made that when we legislate, we don't legislate in terms of our inefficiencies or something like that. I think the point was made to that effect. And I want to test my understanding because I assume that in drafting legislation, you don't draft the legislation to accommodate those who are inefficient within the system. You draft legislation so that it promotes effectiveness. You can even build in your regulations methods of how you deal with those who are not able to meet the expectations of the laws that you made, because the laws are made for the positive and not for the negative. So I thought I just want to test my, because if my understanding is correct, therefore it means that we cannot put legislation that says because of these weaknesses inherent in the system, our legislation must be in line with those weaknesses. It must actually push all of us out of those weaknesses and set some goals that we must all strive to achieve. So I just want a comment from the department whether my understanding is correct. The last one is on page 21. It's just a matter of clarity also. I don't know if my reading of this thing is confusing me or what. You know, if you look at page 21, the second paragraph there, from the side of the, it talks about frequently unaccompanied minors who try to access the refugee reception office are sent away on their own without being attended to or referred to a social worker. But now, if you look at the departmental response, and that's what confuses me, is there the comment about refusal to assist unaccompanied minors is the standard practice? I'm lost. I don't know whether my reading is correct or what is happening, but I think there is something not right here. Thank you.
The department to respond, and Honorable Matebe will follow.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, our apologies. It is a typo on page 21. It is not the standard practice for the department to turn away or to refuse unaccompanied minors. In fact, as we had read it, I had made the change here because it is just a typo. Our apologies for that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. It is not our policy at all. We try to assist. Like I said, our referral system is not 100% yet, and we are working on it so that we have those processes correct. Honorable Member, I think with regard to legislation, your view is correct in terms of that is why I think we also hold the view that we can't legislate to deal with inefficiencies within the system, but rather for the ideal situation that we need and how we would deal with issues that an ideal situation once we are seeking recourse to deal with some of the other issues of inefficiency. Which brings me to the other issue raised, Chairperson, with regard to the issue of the turnaround strategy, and on the same issue of the length of time that we take. Chairperson, it was clear that during the turnaround processes, we turnaround of the department, we had put in excellent processes. in our offices, even in the refugee asylum seeker management area, where we saw that we could issue Section 22 permits within a day for people that come there. We were able to issue them, where in the past people were turned away and were left without any protection for long periods of time and not be issued Section 22 permits. We were able to do that. We even tweaked the asylum seeker, the refugee determination process, and we were able to do determination of status within the prescribed period of 6 months as we had. But clearly, Chairperson, it is not the turnaround, and it is not that there are no efficiencies and the processes are bad. The issue here is purely you have a high demand for services, a huge demand because of the mixed migratory flow. And we also found, Chairperson, that for us to be able to be efficient in this area is not only about processes and people, but it is about policy. And the issue on policy is how do we separate economic migrants from legitimate asylum seekers, and once we have that policy remedy, we would be able to deal with the efficiencies within the asylum seeker management system. So, Chairperson, and that is exactly what we are doing now. We are in a policy review. We are having a look at how to deal with economic migrants, specifically from our region, because the SADC region, that is where we have most of the people coming into South Africa seeking work. We have already, like I said, with the Zimbabwean dispensation, which we are later going to roll out to other nationalities within SADC, we believe that we will be dealing with a lot of, we will be having a remedy to deal with for the start of a policy issue or a policy with how to deal with economic migrants within the region, which will take a huge chunk of people out of the asylum seeker queue. And we do then believe, Chairperson, that this will assist us in our efficiencies and turnaround time for asylum seekers. Processes, and we would be able to do it within the 5-year period that we have. Within the 6-month period that we have, as per our act and as per our turnaround times, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I may come back to the issue of political, the issue that we said we will look into is the issue of political office bearer. And I agree with the Honourable Member in that our remedy here might just be a definition of what is an political office bearer. Because surely someone in some district of South Africa, being a member and a chairperson of a branch or even a sub-branch, really why should he or she be denied having to be able to sit at the level of a refugee appeal on an appeals authority. So one might have to look at, as the Honourable Member had said, look at defining what we mean and a political office bearer is, and maybe that would assist us. And as we said, we would look into the matter. The matter that we will not look into and that we hold fast is the issue of crime that is punishable by imprisonment in South Africa. Because we are clear, that is for serious crime. If you are imprisoned for it, and not what happened in your country, the yardstick should not be what is a serious crime and we start fighting about what is serious, what is not serious. The yardstick should be, if it was committed in South Africa, would you have gone to jail for it? Is it serious enough for you to go to jail for it? And if you face imprisonment, then that should be the yardstick, whether it is serious or not, a chairperson. So we hold to that.
Mr. McKay, chairperson. Can you just hold it there, Mr. Honourable Marcella would like to make a follow-up on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's on this point. I'm drawn into this matter because it's making clarity. I just need to understand, on what basis are you going to judge the one's criminality? Are you going to look at the history of the individual from the country of origin and then look at the judgment, or are you going to look on the crime and what facts or basis or in which you are going to determine whether it is true that this person has indeed committed such crime? So what will be the source of information to grant you such information?
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may respond, and if our asylum seeker management chief director could help here, it would be appreciated as well. Chairperson, when you come into the country, you undergo and you claim asylum, you are asked, you are interviewed and asked certain questions, and people are forthright and sometimes say, I ran away from my country because of ABCD. I committed this crime, I did this, I did that, I did that. The circumstances are then interrogated, and the person would say that it was because of the particular circumstances. Either I was forced to do it, it was of a political nature and not of a criminal nature. If the person then indeed says that I had murdered someone, and the circumstances is not of a political nature for the person that is doing the adjudication, then such a person could be a decision is then taken whether this is a crime that would, if it was committed in South Africa, whether such a crime would be punishable by imprisonment. Sometimes, Chairperson, people are not forthcoming and they do not offer such information. But we might, through either country research or through Interpol warrants or whatever, come to our attention that someone is being sought in his or her country because of a particular crime that has been committed by that person. Firstly, they would need to be looked at in terms of what are the facts on the table. If this person should be if this person is a refugee in South Africa, and if this person would have committed such a crime in South Africa, would he have been imprisoned because of it? So it is not done in terms of information given by the country or forthcoming from the country, because we would not know it at that time. It is information that is offered, or it is information that comes after the fact, after asylum, or after refugee status has been granted. And then you would do your adjudication in terms of the facts that's on the table at that particular time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. McKay?
Yes, Chairperson.
I'm not sure whether you've touched on the issue of 1 month registration.
Yes. Chairperson, on the 1 month registration, it's really it's a requirement for South Africans and everyone in South Africa to adhere to that. If you expect South Africans to adhere to it, anyone coming into South Africa should adhere to it. Surely if you come into South Africa, the first thing is, and here the NGOs can assist us in this, because when it comes to education, it is the responsibility of all of us, government as well as the NGOs, that deal with these issues on the ground level with infected people. And they need to be, and we need to be, to, and as we say in our comments over here, or in our response, that we will have to jack up on our communication and education about about the requirements and what refugees need to do when they come into the country. And at the time when they register as asylum seekers, we believe we should be giving them their all information that they need in terms of as asylum seekers, what their rights are in South Africa, as well as what their responsibilities are within South Africa. And if we expect that of South Africans, then really, we should expect it of foreigners that are in South Africa as well, or asylum seekers or refugees in South Africa. If they are so traumatized, Chairperson, they would be seeking help from either from our NGOs or from any other, and those people should be informing them that in South Africa, if you are pregnant, please make sure that you register your child within the 30 days period that you have after giving birth. So it's really one of education, and we believe that if we expect it of South Africans, then everyone should be able to do that. We even expect it, Chairperson, from traumatized South Africans, because South Africans also are traumatized and get traumatized by any other issue. And it's not only refugees or asylum seekers that are traumatized in our society. Thank you, Chairperson.
These are the last hands. Honorable Matebe, followed by Honorable Khatibone. The last person is Honorable Peterson Madonna, in that order.
Yeah, mine is Adjustic Clarity on page 9, concerning the children of refugees born here in South Africa from refugee parents. As you may be aware, no one can decide where it's going to be born. It will be fair to give them same rights as South African children without discriminating them. My question is that, are those children entitled for a grant in South Africa? Because we have this issue of each and every child gets a grant until he has 18 years. So my question is, are those children from refugee asylum seekers are entitled for grant? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine was a follow-up on people that might have fled their countries because of the crimes they've committed. I wanted to check with Mr. McKay them as to, as they interrogate the circumstances of applicants, do you also check with their countries of origin? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think also I needed, it's just a follow-up question. Whilst we're still on the issue of crime, I just wanted to know the two guys from Botswana who really committed serious crime. I think Meda was one of them. I just wanted to know what happened to those guys. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. McKay, you will respond to those issues that you can respond to. But there are those that I think it will be difficult for you to respond. Mm-hmm. Leave that to us.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that assistance, Chairperson. Chairperson, with regard to the children of refugees or asylum seekers in South Africa, whether they receive grants, I can say that they have the same rights as those children of South Africa, because our law allows that refugees have the same rights as South Africans, except the right to vote. So their children would also have the same rights. Whether they are able to and entitled to grants, we are as the Department of Home Affairs. I do not issue grants, so I can't answer that. But I know they have the same rights as South African children because of the. Of their parents being in South Africa or having refugee status in South Africa. Chairperson, do we check with country of origin when we adjudicate? Honorable Member, through you, Honorable Chairperson, what we do is when we do adjudication, we do country research, either to confirm or to be able to confirm whether the person appearing in front of the adjudicator is either telling the truth and whether indeed he is coming from that country. What we do not do is we do not consult the authorities of that country, because he or she is in fact running away from those authorities. And if it should be found that that person is applying for asylum in South Africa, if he has run away from that country, they might pursue him to South Africa and they might want to harm him in South Africa. So that is why we are very wary of giving out information on refugees or asylum seekers in South Africa, especially when the newspaper started to ask about Rwandese generals, do you have them here? Do you put people at risk, especially when it's asylum seekers or refugees, by saying that you either have them in the country or not. So we try not to consult with the country of origin at all with regard to that, or the authorities of that country. Honorable Chairperson.
I'm sure we've answered all the questions. Are there any more hands, maybe? Honorable Tibedi?
There was one comment made during the presentation. I can't find it here, but it just skipped my mind as I was talking here, where a point was made about children being registered but not entered on the population register. I don't know, but is that not going to create problems in the long run, especially in terms of, or maybe how long is that thing going to be? Maybe I should put my question that way. How long will that person remain outside population register? Because I think the population register helps in defining your budget, your resources, and so on. So are we not running the risk there of overburdening the fiscal of the country?
Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The National Population Register is a register on which we keep South African citizens and permanent residents to South Africa, which means that you have either the status of a citizen or a permanent resident in South Africa. If you do not have that status, then you don't accrue to the national population of this country, which means that you are a sojourner. You can either go back to your country at any time or move in between countries at any particular time. And because refugees and asylum seekers are not permanently in South Africa, but they sojourn in South Africa for a particular time, hopefully when things return to normal, in their country, they would be able to return to their country. So they do not form part of your population register in terms of being citizens or permanent residents. What we then do is we do keep two databases. There will be one for our population and permanent residents, and there will be one for asylum seekers and refugees. And these two databases we would use data from both to assist in planning at any particular time. But it is to keep our national population register clean from other data of people that are not permanent residents, who are in transit. That is the correct word. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Oh, Advocate Rasmus, you wanted to say something.
Thanks, Chairperson. Without wanting to belabor the point, just for clarification purposes as well, that specific child born of an asylum seeker or refugee is issued with a certificate in terms of the Birth and Death Registration Act as proof that their child was indeed born here. So that should they go back at the end, there is proof that this child was indeed born here. But as Mr. McKay has indicated, there's a separate database on which this will be captured. So you don't sit with a situation where a child is born here without any identification at all. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you, Advocate Rasmus. Honorable members, we've heard the response from the department. Ours is to shape up the policies or laws of our country in accordance to our constitution. But one other thing that worries us, Advocate Rasmus, you heard the honorable members raising a concern of two Botswanian citizens who committed crime in their country and are in our country. And we have a Mr. Oka, who's also, we don't know, it's alleged that he is in contact with the, should I say, rebels in the Niger Delta, somewhere around there. And we have many, many other foreign nationals who are in the country who have done wrong things from their countries of origin. Like there's one, Mr. Kressel something from Czechoslovakia, who's also in the country. He's done wrong things where he comes from, and he's here again involved in syndicates. It worries you when you are, you know, a citizen of this country as to how are we supposed to deal with such a situation. And I do think that we do need to have a policy or law that is going to help us in dealing with such situation. Or do we have maybe something at hand that is there for us to do or to handle such situation, of which I don't think we do have, because if we had, some of the people would have been removed from the country. Advocate.
Thanks, Chairperson. And without going into a lot of detail, what happens in this regard, obviously the Immigration Act has certain provisions in it, and you can deport a person if they've done certain or committed crimes, etc., if they've transgressed the provisions of the Immigration Act. Now, that's if we move to the Immigration Act. However, having done that, you've got your Section 8 review procedures, and you've also got where they can apply to the minister or appeal to the minister for it. Then you've also got your judicial review of an administrative decision. Now, what happens in this regard is we have been taken, and I can't go in because two of these matters are sub judice. I can't go into details of them. So they have approached court, and we are obviously opposing certain of these matters, and it will be dealt with in court. But as I say, we're not being taken to court at the end of the day. The people are dealt with in terms of the Immigration Act and deported accordingly. But once there's an application lodged in the High Court, one has to deal with it and follow the normal court process, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, Advocate Rasmus. I was just raising it, you know, just to make us aware that, you know, we have such cases, that such situations of which you don't know how to deal with. Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair. I'm raising a question that is of great concern to me, and I'm linking it to the concerns that were raised last week about the Zimbabwean project. I know it's not directly to do with the Refugee Amendment Bill, but I don't get any clarity from the Act, the Amendment Act, or the Bill. In the Zimbabwean project, and it might be rolled out to other projects in the future, so I think it's very important to have clarity. The applicants, the Zimbabwean applicants, are required to forego their asylum status. They are required, there are two forms, there are three forms, as I see it on the website. One of the forms, Chair, is an application for a work, study, or business permit. The other two forms have to do with foregoing, relinquishing their asylum status. So taking themselves totally out of this refugee process. Now, if a person is unsuccessful, if a Zimbabwean is unsuccessful in getting a work study or business permit, they are out, they have signed to say they are out of the asylum seekers process. What happens to them then? They are illegal, they can be deported. Can they re-enter the asylum seekers process? As I say, I don't see any clarity in the legislation, and I wonder if clarity can be provided. And we might just note that clarity generally is lacking within the Zimbabwean project. But that particular question, Chair, I think is of importance to have an answer to.
Mr. McKay, are you able?
Yes, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, with the Zimbabwean documentation process, we said that we will grant work permits, study permits, or business permits to Zimbabweans that are already in the country and that's already working, running a business or studying in South Africa. So the criteria is clear. We also said, Chairperson, that the requirements for it is also greatly reduced. We said all that you need is a passport and a proof of registration of if you are a student, a letter from your employer if you are employed, and a certificate, either a Cipro registration, or we said that a SARS registration, which the portfolio committee was clear that we need to people that are legitimate that get these business permits, and we need to see that they are registered. So that is the requirement. And Chairperson, it is voluntary. You can apply for it, or you can't, or you can stay within the present dispensation that you are in. So if you are an asylum, so the people that are targeted are those that are illegal in South Africa, meaning they are neither in the asylum seeker process or anything, they are just illegal, but they are running and living in South Africa. They are able then to legitimize themselves through these reduced requirements. We have also said that those that have our documentation in South Africa, we will grant you amnesty if you return our documents to us and if you apply for these documents. So Cabinet was lenient in that as well. And thirdly, we said then there is that category of people that are asylum seekers in South Africa that have asylum seekers that are actually economic migrants. But because we don't have a dispensation and because they do not qualify as per the requirements, the current requirements of the Immigration Act, they do not qualify. We are targeting them as well because we now have reduced requirements and they can then apply for the work or study of business permit, but they would have to forego their asylum seeker process. Now, why have we done? Firstly, if you are an asylum seeker in South Africa, you can't go home to Zimbabwe anymore. You are seeking the protection of South Africa. And if we find you have left the country and come back in again, we can take away your asylum seeker status and return you to South Africa, to Zimbabwe, because you have availed yourself to the protection of your country again. So what we are then saying is that to, and most of these Zimbabweans, because they are not genuine asylum seekers but economic migrants, they then use informal routes to go out of the country and go back home to visit family and use an informal route to come back, putting themselves at danger by those goma gomas, people that rape them, kill them, and all those funny things that happen at our border, the informal crossings. So government then says, if you forgo this asylum seeker process, we will grant you a permit valid for 4 years, and you can renew it if you are still working in South Africa, still studying in South Africa, and still having a business in South Africa, and you would regularize your stay and be able to visit home and come in regularly like all other migrants do, legitimate migrants do. So they do have a choice in that. So people that want to remain within the asylum seeker process are free to do so. They are not being cajoled to apply for the other one. But if you do apply for the other permit, then we are asking you to forego your asylum, because what you are actually saying is that I am not an asylum seeker, I am an economic migrant, and I'm applying for this document. And we are asking to forego that so that we don't have you running in two regimes here, the Immigration Act as well as the Refugee Act. And we think it is proper, it is just, and as long as we do not cajole people and saying we are taking out of that queue and you are now going to apply for this, and they need to forego that voluntarily. Mm-hmm. And that is how it is being implemented, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, my apologies.
On that note, Honourable Members, we are meeting next week, Tuesday. We are continuing with the Refugee Amendment Bill and the issue of the Status Determination Committee. We said we are flagging it up until our next meeting, if I remember. Did we agree on that? That we are going to deal with that the next time. It's for the department to go and sleep over it, and next Tuesday when we meet, we will get clear clarity on that one. On that note, the meeting is adjourned, and thank you very much.
Thank you.